This is STP Con Radio.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mike Lyles, and welcome to this episode of STP Radio. I'll be your host today for the first of a series of interviews that we will be conducting with several speakers who will be attending our upcoming STP conference in spring. STP is going to be in San Francisco, California, April 4th through the 7th this year. We hope to see you guys there. And be sure to check out www.stpcon.com, where you can learn more about the conference, the speakers, our special events, and our conference pricing. And just a note, if you join now, you can receive our early bird discount, so do not wait too long. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. You'll find us at Software Test Pro on both of these. And so let's get started. Today we're interviewing the members of our keynote panel, which will take place during our general session on Thursday morning of the conference. This keynote is called Test Revolution. The R is in parentheses, so it's like Test Evolution and Revolution, an expert panel on software testing. And I'm very happy, very, very happy to have with me today those experts that are going to be on the panel. Smita Mishra, Dave Hefner, and Damian Sinadinos. Did I get that right, Damian?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Perfect. So I'd like to start with a quick introduction from each of you guys today. So as you're called on, just let me know a little bit about you. Let the audience know a little bit about yourself, how you got into testing, and anything else that you would like to share with us along the way. So we will start with Smita.
Hey, Mike. Thank you so much for having me on this call. I'm really, really grateful to STP for giving me these opportunities to be here. Let me start with where my actual professional life started. So I graduated as an engineer in 2001, and I moved on to be a tester immediately because my campus placement was that as a fresher. I did not know back then that there is something like software testing, which is a separate line of work. And rest is history. From there onwards, I actually got into, I worked for 10 years from 2001 to 2010 into various organizations in various capacities across financial and retail organizations, healthcare organizations, as a tester and program manager. Finally, in 2010, I actually took a plunge to give up on working for somebody else and started to work for myself. And that's how QA Zone Info Systems took place. I'm based in New Delhi, India, so that's where QA Zone is also based out of. It's incorporated in the US too. And so it's a software testing services again. It's a services company, and we've been serving majorly domestic clients in India and a couple of them in the US. I'm also a part of Test Practitioners Club. It's a meetup that has started in the last 3 years, and we've grown to be over 400 people there in the meetup. And we have like small meetups almost monthly or bi-monthly, which is again for the testers across local areas. And we also hosted a small testing conference last year, that's ThinkTest here in India, again for testers here, because there's not many activity here. We're not as lucky as people there in the US where STP happens. Besides that, I just recently launched a product called Pool Wallet, which we can talk about later. And I'm launching another product called Vinker. So we'll talk about more on these as we go forward with the call. Thanks.
And she mentions a small conference, but this conference included James Bach as the the main speaker. So I'm not sure if I would call it a small conference.
Yes, it was indeed. It was overbooked by about almost 50%.
Yes. Okay. So Dave Hefner is our next person up. Dave, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Hi, everybody. So the easy answer for me is I write and talk and teach about how to use Selenium. That's what I do. That's what I've done for years. Just a quick background. I got into testing out of boredom as a network engineer working at a company and saw an opportunity to move laterally into testing, not knowing anything about what it was, and was tasked with the opportunity to implement and improve the existing test automation. And at the time, it was Selenium IDE, and this is back in the heyday of Selenium RC, And I started writing about how to use Selenium successfully because I was frustrated by how hard it was to find information for myself. And then I started a newsletter, which is still going. It's a weekly newsletter. I just branched out from one programming language into two. So now I support Ruby and Java. That's elementalselenium.com. And then I also wrote a book also on how to use Selenium, which steps you through everything from just starting from scratch to a fully scaled infrastructure, basically. And that's also in Java and Ruby. And I plan to basically keep doing that and then write about every supported programming language that Selenium supports. That's me.
And our next is Damien. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Damien.
Absolutely. Hi, Mike. Hi, everyone. I'll build a little context for you. I grew up around computers when I was very young. A lot of folks were perhaps doing other activities. I was teaching myself BASIC when I was 8 years old and editing games on a TRS-80. So I've always been interested in computers and programming. When I was 19, I had an opportunity to get hired at CompuServe into their quality assurance department as a co-op, and that led to actually my career. I didn't know what I was doing at the time. It's one of those back into testing stories. But very quickly, I got into what's historically known as automation. I was using tools in the early 90s and 1993 to help me exercise and explore software. And that happened over the next 10 or 12 years at a variety of different companies and industries. The last 10 years, I've been mostly leading people and projects with regards to testing, helping manage testing efforts. And more recently, I've had an interest in mentoring, teaching, training, and education in testing. I see it as a way to kind of give back to the community, taking everything that I've learned and experienced through my 23-year career and maybe help others. One way I do that is help organize a conference locally in Columbus, Ohio called QAir the Highway. I also do mentoring of local testers and testers around the world to help them with their daily struggles and discuss testing. What else? I was one of the judges on the first annual Software Testing World Cup. That was pretty neat, getting to evaluate other testers' performances, how they approached testing, how they executed their testing activities, what types of things did they notice. That was a really neat experience. And right now, I'm doing something a little on the fringe of testing. It's enterprise metrics and reporting lead at a large bank. It's a fancy title that basically means that I help people answer questions and tell stories about their quality and testing using data. So that's kind of a brief story of my career.
Very interesting, and I've got more to ask you about the answering questions with data. That intrigued me when I read that about you. So
sure.
Okay. So, Smita, let's talk about your workshops. We've got three things for you coming up with STP, the two workshops in one session. So let's step into the first workshop. Tell us a little bit about your workshop that's called So You Are Planning a Startup, Navigating the UX Jungle.
Yeah, but before that, let me tell you that Damien reminded me. Damien, I was also on the first Software Testing World Cup.
That's right, you were, yes.
Yeah, yes, it was a good experience, yes.
Indeed.
So, yeah, I'm actually speaking each day of the conference this time, which is not something I've done earlier. So I'm speaking on 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th each day. And as I told you that we also developed a product, Pool Wallet, and that was a new experience for me to develop a product and learn what could work with people, what could not, what is actually user experience. I mean, I had read the theory. I had also tested it. So when we were testing it, I was at one side of story, slowly mingling with the product teams and trying to understand what do they think when they are progressing towards the product, different iterations of product development. But when I was on the other side of it, there were various experiences that I had, which I wanted to share with the testing team here. And that's where this comes up, where I want to actually share my experiences of how we have navigated through the user experience of this product, Pool Wallet. So even if we may not be specifically talking about Pool Wallet, I want to really talk about what are the basics of user experience that we have learned so far and how we captured the feedbacks, how we reiterated, what was our basis to pivot, how much should we pivot, and what should be your basics for designing? Because a lot of times people get caught up with the user interface and colors and look and feel of the product, and where they miss is that a lot of the leading companies have been pretty simple, which is very difficult being simple there. But these leading organizations have pretty simple products which are actually doing exactly what the user wants them to do. And that should be the focus of it. So that's precisely what we're going to discuss in this workshop, and doing some hands-on exercises and role-playing to understand how to develop a product which is more closer to the user needs.
And I think that's a great subject to talk on. We see so many apps out there. The world's becoming full of them. And I think having those apps, a lot of times you'll find that companies or developers will create those apps, to your point, more with the user interface and forgetting about the user experience. And I think this is going to be a very good workshop to help people think about, they need to think differently. So the next one is your workshop on living in a context-driven world.
Yes, there's another workshop that I'm doing on living in a context-driven world. So as I told you that I started a software testing services company in 2010, and frankly, I started this as a very, very requirements-based testing service, which I had done for 10 years. And gradually, I realized that I was becoming part of the same group that I left, because I wasn't happy doing that kind of testing, and I was continuing to practice it. And slowly I transformed and I got in touch with the context-driven world here, the testers world of James Bock and Michael Bolton's and a lot of others. Damien is here, you are here. So that's where I kind of changed our practice in the organization. We did a lot of hiring and firing, and what we finally realized was that it was not, when you're trying to move to context-driven testing or you're trying to do it, it's not just change the way you're testing. You don't write a different kind of test case for it. It's not like today you're writing a certain kind of work and tomorrow you're just writing some other kind of work. It's a total mental shift. It's a paradigm shift, as you called. And for testers, it's very important to understand that it's not something that you can just change in one part of your work and feel that, you know what, I'm a context-driven tester. It doesn't work like this. You have to live it in every part of your life. You have to actually transform as a person to be able to become a context-driven tester. You have to ask more questions. You have to understand. You have to be okay to not know many things and gradually learn. A lot of these things are not very welcome in our real-world organizations, where people want an instant answer for everything from estimations to whatnot.
So awesome.
We're going to talk about how do you actually transform to it? What are the things I did? What are the various probably classes or trainings, discussions, forums? How to reach out to that we took? How to reach out to other testers? How to actually become a context-driven tester, and then actually live with it and try to influence around and make that influence grow that influence in your organization.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. Well, and I think that's an awesome thing, because we realized a year and a half ago that context-driven wasn't a majority of the discussions at STP, and you were actually instrumental in making sure that we brought that on board and started to bring in some classes to the organization. And we start seeing people now that are in the context-driven community wanting to speak at STP, and we're starting to see more courses. So thanks to you for that, and thanks to the others that have stepped in and brought the same. So let's skip to Dave. I want to talk about your two workshops. I think we can blend those together, and you can talk about them separately if you wish. But the first one is getting started with Selenium, and the second one is using Selenium successfully.
Yeah, I guess the way I look at it is it ultimately is a full day of two workshops, and the best use of everyone's time would be, I guess, to do both. But if you're just already kind of on your way with Selenium, then you can potentially skip the morning session. And effectively, What the workshop is a distillation of my book with just kind of a hands-on walkthrough of getting set up with Selenium and how to write well-factored code and figuring out how to understand what's important to test or check if that word bothers you when I refer to automation. So basically, the first thing I tried to do in this workshop is say, just because you can automate does not mean you should automate. So here are some kind of some good questions to ask in your organization to make sure that you're focusing on the right things, rather than just saying, this new feature is being developed, so let's just write automation for it. That's not necessarily it depends where you are in terms of maturity within your organization for for automation. And so I cover all that pretty briefly, but I think it's important. So I always go over it every time I talk about kind of the getting started basics of Selenium. And then I dig into just a high level, here is Selenium, kind of past, present, future, good, bad, ugly, in a nutshell. And then dig into, here are the problems that people think Selenium has, and here are ways to mitigate it by using some really simple fundamentals for test writing. I specifically say test writing, I mean like writing test code as in unit test code. We actually use a unit test runner and basically dig in. We just get in the weeds and we start, we make sure everyone's machine set up before showing up, and we step through writing some tests, and then we step through cleaning those up a little bit, making them easier to read, making them more maintainable. And then we kind of, you know, talk about some other things from there, some limitations of Selenium, some workarounds. And then that's pretty much the morning session. And then the afternoon session is kind of taking those tests from the morning session and making them scale. Because out of the box, Selenium really works well with Firefox. It's very easy to get started. But then when you want to go into other browsers and platforms, you have to start to add additional configuration and potentially additional infrastructure. So we cover the different options for that, the pros and cons of those, and step through a couple of examples using like Selenium Grid versus a third party like Sauce Labs. And then we kind of go from there to making everything useful with reporting, talking about really the advantage of automation with Selenium is to not write tests and have you run it. It's to have it run as part of a bigger ecosystem that is you know for the business and for people on your team. So hopefully you have good information that's coming out of your Selenium tests, and then you have good reporting, and it's plugged into something like continuous integration. So I cover that as well. It's kind of a lot to pack into a day, and every time I do it, I'm always surprised by how much we get done in a day. But I do feel like it's definitely cramming a lot in. So as long as everyone comes prepared and ready to learn and has their coffee, I think we should be good.
You know, I know you're the name, one of the names in Selenium testing, and folks know you very well everywhere I go. And I think one of the things for the audience to be aware of is that we've done this class or similar class to this in previous STPs, and we had 71 people in the class the last time. And I'm not sure we're going to have the room size or to be able to fill it up that way. We may have to turn people away. So if you're wanting to be in this class, sign up now, get your early bird discount, and get in there and get into this workshop before it's too late. That's what I would warn anyone.
Oh, yeah. And just one more point. There actually is a discount for my book, which is kind of the perfect addendum to the workshop. It's kind of the, you know, I there's a PDF I'll give out, but it's not as in depth as the book might be. So there is a discount after people register that I believe that you guys send out.
Yes. And we will have more on that soon. Damien, we've got a workshop coming up called Commutication, Commutication, an exploration of idea transfer with words. And I will tell you, Damien, STP has received several emails from people saying you've misspelled this word. So testers are doing their job. They're finding things wrong, but it was misspelled on purpose.
Mission accomplished.
Yes. Damien does that every time.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about your workshop.
Sure. I'll start a little bit further back. As I mentioned before, part of what I do now is help mentoring and education and teaching junior testers and actually testers of any experience level that are interested in working together and collaborating and learning. And a lot of the things I find that I'm interested in learning about myself and end up teaching and discussing with other testers have very little to do with testing. They're just general concepts, ideas that happen perhaps to help people with their testing careers, but can also help them in other ways too. So one of those things is communication. I'm fascinated with communication, the different ways that we communicate, the ways that communication can fail. It's very interesting to me. I like language and wordplay. So, and this is one of the things I talk with a lot when I do mentoring and teaching is communication. It's absolutely essential to be a clear, effective, good communicator if you're a tester, because that's a large part of your job. And so in this workshop, communication, I won't get into the name yet. It's not misspelled, or it is misspelled, or perhaps I'll let you decide for yourself, and we'll talk about it in the workshop itself. I don't want to give away too much, but basically what I do is I start with the definition of definition and really dissect it, dig into it, understand what a definition is and what words are and what meaning is and what's the relationship between words and definitions and what are semantics, and really do a deep dive into these ideas and concepts, some properties and characteristics of words and definitions that maybe you or, folks are not familiar with. And I think it will help get a deeper understanding of what these things are that we use to communicate with each other. I also talk about various ways to communicate. In this particular workshop, we're talking about words, communicating with words, idea transfer with words. But I use pop culture. Imagine telepathy. Imagine if, you could be Spock and do a mind meld. Maybe a business analyst would be out of a job if the customer could give their ideas directly to the developer. And imagine all the problems that would come with that as well. If ideas, whether they could be transferred or not, were still unclear. I talk about nonverbal communication, written communication, and I talk a lot about ways that communication can fail. There's many, many, many ways that communication can fail. And we look at some of those. We understand the causes, why they can fail, examine them in detail, and then the effects. We look at some historical examples of miscommunication and what happened because of it. I'll give some personal examples of miscommunication, and in workshop style, we're going to be leaning heavily on the attendees to participate and offer up their own examples of miscommunication and what happened and why it happened. And then we get into some heuristics to hopefully help people reduce miscommunication and improve their communication, make it more clear and effective. When to use these types of tips and tricks, when to use these guidelines, how to use them, how they might help you, how even these heuristics might fail to help communication. There's a great quote, let me find it, by George Bernard Shaw, perhaps William H. White. This is up for debate. It says, "The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place." And I, in my experience, I found that to be true. You often hear people talking past each other and having shallow agreement, which we'll talk a lot about in the class, in the workshop. And so after going through all of the things I've mentioned, we're going to talk a little bit about common languages, lingua franca, trade languages, the history of those, how they were used, how they developed, and how a common language or a trade language might be useful or interesting for testers. And then we're going to take everything we've talked about and try and make a common testing language. We're going to, as a workshop, break into groups, try and define some testing terms and come to an agreement and share ideas, transfer ideas between our heads with words, and see just how difficult it can be, even in a small, narrow-boundaried environment with a very specific context. So that's kind of the gist of the class. It really delves deeper into ideas that people perhaps don't think about regularly. So hopefully that's what people will expect.
I didn't understand a thing you said. No, I'm just kidding. Okay.
Come to the workshop to get some ways to help be better understood and understand others.
So I had to do that.
I've been talking about importance of communication, right?
Yes. I've been holding that statement the whole time you were talking. So
I love
it. Yeah. So let's stick with you for a second, because I knew we would do this because you guys have got great material, great ideas. We're going to run out of time right away in a few moments, but I wanted to at least touch upon one thing with each of you, and then also I wanted to talk about Smith's session as well. But in yours, Damien, when I looked you up, I noticed that your role is in metrics and reporting and around that realm. But one of the things you said, and I've seen it several places linked to you, is you answer questions and tell stories with data. So what issues do you see with metrics and data and telling the story accurately to your stakeholders?
It's similar to an issue I see in other areas outside of metrics, blind application of solutions without considering the context. I recently have been calling myself more of a problem solver that happens to use their skills, experience, and knowledge in a testing arena. I'm fascinated by problems. I like to understand problems, dig into them, and that helps me understand how to solve them. And that applies to the context-driven way of testing, the context way of living. I'm fascinated by Smita's workshop. I wish I could attend it, but we're at the same time. So tough competition because it sounds really interesting. But I strongly believe that context
Thank
drives
you.
The solution. Sure. So one problem I see with metrics and measurements in testing is that people try to find silver bullets, try to find easy ways out, try to find measurements that can tell them a quick answer without doing the hard work. Oftentimes people will say, what's the best practice or what's the one metric that I should use at my company? I'm going to lean on Karen Johnson, another keynote speaking at the conference. I love her at KarenNJohnson.com on her services page. She has a great question. It's kind of a FAQ. It says, what do you do? I mean, really exactly what do you do? And she says, it depends. You probably expected an answer, but it really depends on what the client needs. And I love that as an introduction to an answer because I see metrics in the same way. People say, what metrics should I use? What are my KPIs? And I say, well, it depends. It really depends on what questions you want to answer or what stories you want to tell. We have to dig deep into those questions, dig deep into those answers, and understand the construct validity. There's a great paper by Kim Kaner out there. You can look up and read about construct validity. But understanding the problem, the thing that you're trying to measure, will help you figure out the correct way to measure it. Hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. I'm definitely intrigued by metrics. I've got a workshop in the morning. I won't go into that during this interview. We'll have that down the road in future interviews. But when you talk about data, Smita, let's talk about your session on maximizing success with data testing.
Yeah, I think more of the part that I wanted to talk about was actually covered by Damien, but I'll add. I think after God, data is omnipresent today. It's everywhere. And I actually find that to be true. And I realized that, I mean, not me just, but everyone here could see that data is almost becoming the new currency. Everybody is talking about protecting their data. Everybody is sensitive towards their data. But and there are new technologies and analytics and everything coming up for the big data analytics as they talk. Data is being processed in so many ways, sliced and diced to come up with some kind of magic analytic that would help the company grow. The problem is that the maths part of it is really easy. It's done. Okay, there is a maths part of it. There's a science part of it. But the art part of it, or the actual what data should we pick, what is the context of it, what are we actually trying to do, is the difficult part. So in my session, I'm going to quickly talk about the basics, because as a tester, when you come across data testing, yes, there are some ETL testings. You have to know these terms. There are enterprise data warehouse. There are data marts. So what are these different terms and what do we do? How do we test around them? What is big data? How do we test big data? Yes, we'll quickly run through them and business intelligence. But the major message that I would like to go across would be, okay, these are the ways you do it. But what is important as a tester is to figure out what is that data that you're playing with. It's not about what you are doing to the data. That's secondary. Let's first pick the right data and to secure that data. So that's
okay.
What we need to talk about. Yeah.
Well, Dave, I'm going to step out of a little bit of the realm of testing, and actually you can, I know, bring it back. But I remember talking with you. You were looking at automobiles, looking and actually working with mechanics for gas to electric cars conversion. And how do you relate that to testing, and what can you tell us about your work and your research in that?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's funny. I told you that. I didn't actually think that would make it into the keynote conversation. I spent the last 4 months learning how to become a machinist. And right now I'm learning welding. And it is all for the express purpose of figuring out how to basically, as much of it as on my own, be able to learn to convert combustion vehicles to electric. That's just something that's super interesting to me. And what I learned through the process of learning machining, specifically manual machining, the real old school, you hop on a mill or a lathe or a surface grinder and you turn the dials by hand. And then you do a little bit of work and then you measure and you try to be as precise. And precision in machining is down to a thousandth of an inch or more, depending on the tolerances that you're looking for. And this is all done by, like, you know, some of it's eyeballing it, some of it's using precision measurement tools, but it's all done by hand. And then we also, as part of this is a very long class I took, and we actually had a really small component on CNC, so computer numerical control. where you take all of the things we've been doing by hand and learn how to program a machine to do it. And I just saw like this obvious parallel between like the idea of manual testing and automation within software, where what's happening a lot of times right now, specifically in the actual machining world, is people are learning how to become CNC operators, but they're not learning the fundamentals of manual machining or machining in general, like the process that goes into actually working with the metal, like how does the metal react to certain RPMs of it being spun with a tool cutting it. And when you just put someone on a machine and just tell them how to push buttons and then, you know, respond to that, it's fine when things work well, but when things don't work, they're not equipped to handle it. And what I found is in my perception of how that relates to software testing is that my concern with test automation is that I think that a lot of people race to it thinking that it is this silver bullet. Like Damon was mentioning how there's no silver bullet for communication. There's also no silver bullet for testing. And that's why data is so prevalent. And I'm a big proponent of that as well. I think that people are rushing to test automation and looking for an easy way to use it. And for me, there's the two things that are the most common things that come up. Or for people just getting started, is they want like something simple, like a record and playback tool that's easy to use. And unfortunately, when it works okay. And when it doesn't, it doesn't work very well at all. And I think that that's really kind of very similar to the idea of a CNC operator. It's like very, very push button. And then the other one is just blindly trying to automate everything when it doesn't make sense. So in the sense of machining, if you need to manufacture 10,000 parts, then it makes a lot of sense to put in a ton of effort to program how to do that on a CNC. But if you only need like one or 10, then maybe it's fine to just do that by hand. There's not really the needed effort to look into automation for that. And it's not to say that you couldn't get the same level of quality. It's just the amount of time put in and the amount of scaling that's available as a result. So I think there's a direct corollary between the two.
I'm looking forward to hearing more about that down the road. And I know that may not be something we do in the keynote or the training, but I think we'll hear more of that from you as well. My next question is for Damien. In our last STP, you talked about jester to tester, using improv to help testing. And then I want to kind of combine that with your note in your biography about having that for the past 10 years, you've been teaching and leading testers. So how do you blend that? It was an excellent session. There were a lot of engagement in that session from the getting people up there and talking. How do you use improv to do the testing and help testing grow?
Sure. Thanks for the kind words. Appreciate that. So when I do my introduction and who the heck is this Damien guy up in front of you, I not only talk about my testing and professional credentials to perhaps allay some people's concerns or give them more information about who I am professionally, but I also like to talk about me personally because I think that it's hard to summarize a human being, to quickly give a synopsis of what a person is without understanding more about them. And I think that personal, extracurricular, non-professional activities can tell you a lot about a person. So I talk about some of my personal interests. One of those is improvisational comedy, which I've been doing for about 10 years. And I realized, just like Dave did with his extracurricular activities, that there's parallels and correlations between different activities and whether they be testing in another activity or skiing and basketball or basketball and cooking. There's always ways that you can relate things. So I put together a presentation that uses improvisation as an analogy or a metaphor for testing. Speaking about that, I think that analogy and metaphor is a very powerful way of learning and of teaching. So when I do mentor testers, I try and understand and learn more about them as a person. What are their other interests outside of testing? And sometimes that allows them to see testing in a different light, reframe, change their perspective to say, okay, so you're interested in cooking. Let's talk about cooking. Can we see any way that cooking perhaps is parallel or has correlations to testing? And sometimes understanding and knowing a lot about situation A or context A can help you better understand context B that you maybe don't know a lot about.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing your workshops as well. And
thank you.
So, Smita, the last question that I have for the group would be for you, being the the only female on the panel.
Okay.
One of the things that came up that I've seen in around you is you were invited to speak at SheRows, which is an organization in India, which you can tell about. And then also you're a member of Women in Testing. So can you tell us a little bit about those and your interaction with those two?
This is like a curse and a boon both. I can never run out of this question. If I'm on a panel somewhere, I have to talk about women. So good. I'll do that. Thank you so much for asking. Yes, I was invited to speak at SheRows. That was to represent my product, Pool Wallet, and digital India getting more digital. And as I told you, that Pool Wallet is a person-to-person payment app that we developed. It also allows you to share expenses amongst friends and family. So it's very, very India-based app. It's not really a global app, so you won't be able to test it there. So as part of SheRows, I think I was speaking there to represent a section of women in technology who are using a digital platform to grow their career. And I know that when you come across a lot of women-related programs or work, it's either at the grassroots level where there are very, very poor people who do not have access to proper healthcare and education. There's a lot of feminism being talked about there. And or there is like a top level discussion where women should be in the boardrooms and that there are not enough women represented there. But I see that there's a gap in between both of them, as which is actually filled by SheRows. There are millions of women who are actually reasonably educated and are okay to work if they are given enough opportunities and freedom to work in a flexible manner. And if the businesses are open to redesign their business model to be able to include these women who are willing to work but are unable to because of probably strict timelines or something like that, or cultural misfits, cultural issues, precisely. So SheRows is the group which actually talks about redesigning work and life for women. It's not really trying to sell any kind of pink content, which there is enough. And actually, there is a place in society for both, like grassroots level stuff and boardroom level stuff. But SheRows is something which I can relate to as somebody who's very, very middle class, educated, and would like to work, but has a family to take care of. How do we juggle between them? So that's what SheRows is about.
We have one more question, and I want to open it up to all three of you, and I would love for you to give us a very quick response, everyone. So what is the one thing each of you are looking forward to the most about this STPCon that's coming up?
I think it's the same that I look forward to every year, because I've been associated with STP for now last couple of seasons, spring, fall, I guess 2 years now. I think STP was also rated as number 2 globally amongst all the testing conferences, which is a really commendable ranking. And for such a good, great conference, when I go to attend there, my major opportunity is always about looking forward to meet new people, meet the testing leaders, what they're doing, the practitioners, what they have learned over the last 6 months, last 1 year. There are a lot of repeat people also who come up there. It's always great to catch up with them and understand what we did over these few months in gap, and how did our practice go better or worse. So it's like, especially being associated with one particular group, it's easier to go back and meet the same people and say, okay, these things worked better. And with these things did not work so well. And with new influx of people and of more context-driven testers coming in and speaking here, it's a major opportunity for me to learn there. So that's what I'm looking forward to, networking and learning.
Dave, what about you?
I'm looking forward to the keynote panel, kind of, I don't know, stepping through it, hearing the questions that are of interest to the community and the attendees, and just hearing how we as a group kind of facilitate answering that, just hearing what comes out of our mouth. And, you know, there's the answers we think we're going to say, and then there's the kind of the improv, if you will, of the moment, and just kind of seeing what we get when we play off of each other. I'm really excited to kind of see how that plays out.
And Damien, how about
sure.
you?
Sure. I'll build on both of those answers. The keynote, I've done presentations before, which is very unidirectional, just speaking at people. The keynote panel is a different way of interacting with folks, where you're fielding questions and perhaps some light interaction, and that's going to be fascinating to me. I've never done that exactly, but it's going to be a really intriguing way to learn. And then the workshop is another way of learning and growing. It's facilitated discussion, it's deep interaction, and it's refining of ideas. I've put a lot of time into this workshop, but I can't wait to find the things that I learn from working with others in this setting. So to build on Sumita's idea of learning, I can't wait to learn myself and help others learn as well. And to build on Dave's, the keynote panel, the improvisational aspect of fielding unknown questions, tough questions, being challenged, that's exciting to me, and I hope it's valuable to others as well.
Thank you so much. And guys, I've really enjoyed this. This has been awesome. And thank you, each of you, for taking our request to be on this panel, and most importantly, for being part of this interview today.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you all.
So everyone out there, get out to stp.com. If you've not been there yet, get out there, get signed up. The seats are filling up. It's less than 2 months away. So I request you to get out there, keep listening. There's going to be more interviews, several with several of our speakers. So get out there, listen to us, and have a great day.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of STP Radio. Stay tuned for more interviews, and don't forget, check out stpcon.com to learn more about the conference being held at the Westin San Francisco Airport Hotel, April 4th through 7th.